You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 11 June, and 10 years since World Cup 2010 started. I'm Simon Brown, coming to you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mateta Tolari, we're going to talk the Federal Open Monetary Policy Committee keeping rates at zero, suggesting it will do so through to 2022. We're going to be chatting to Anthony Clark, Signia results, and Ascendus CFO quits, and Keith McLachlan on investors and how they can understand debt within the listed space. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: Tito Mboweni's emergency budget during a couple of weeks, and the harsh realities awaiting South Africa. And from CNBC, Fed sees interest rates staying near zero through 2022, and they expect the GDP to bounce back to 5% next year. Morning markets mixed again in the US. S&P down 0.5%. NASDAQ another all-time high, up 0.7%. Asia red across the board and mostly very red. Sydney -2.8%. Tokyo -2.1%. Commodities, gold up 1.2%. Rest is red. West Texas off just over 3%. And Brent down almost 3%. The ZAR 1670, that after a touched 1650 overnight, and the top 40 opening call, we're looking for an open down 1.1%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting to Mateta Tolari. He's a business analyst at RMB. Mateta, appreciate your time this morning. We had the Federal Open Monetary Policy Committee announcement yesterday, last night our time, keeping rates in the US pretty much at zero. That not the surprise. Suggesting they will do so through to 2020. I suppose that, frankly, not really a surprise either, that they're going to keep these rates low as long as it is required, and it's going to take a couple of years.
Good morning, Simon. I wouldn't say happy Thursday, especially given the fact that the Rand has pulled back so much. I mean, it's quite interesting that I was actually sitting up and waiting for Jerome Powell last night at 8 o'clock. And as you say, obviously, you know, not much of a surprise in terms of obviously the Fed keeping rates unchanged. But, you know, they did allude to the fact that they are going to pledge to continue their asset purchases at least a current pace, and signals that interest rates will remain unchanged through to 2022. But I suppose what also is interesting is that all 17 FOMC members, you know, they're in the same camp that they won't do anything. And obviously, you know, this asset purchase, that's a minimum of around $80 billion a month in treasuries and about $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities. So, you know, that Jerome Powell did also, you know, allude to the fact that they will continue to use these powers forcefully and obviously proactively to try and keep the U.S. On the road to recovery, especially given the fact that, you know, I think we are still seeing more corona cases coming through in the U.S. And I think that's also what led to the sell-off this morning, that, you know, the Fed is also preparing itself for a three-year climb back to GDP.
Yeah, the one thing you mentioned, the corona cases, 14 states still got rising cases. And the one thing, I mean, Jerome Powell said it, I think last month, he said, we'll do whatever it takes. The key point, when Jerome Powell says that, I mean, he can do whatever is required. They've got the balance sheet. If our minister said it, or if our governor said it, they simply haven't got it. The US can. They can do $120 billion a month, no problem. They can keep their rates at zero, no problem.
Definitely. Look, I mean, and as we know, obviously we've got our, you know, revised budget coming through on the 24th of June. Tito Mboweni is going to give us that. But if you just look at the Fed, I mean, you know, they have also said, with CPI declining by 0.1% in May, they're actually also seeing reduced inflationary pressures continuing for some time. And obviously in China, analysis also looks at, you know, the central and the local public debt levels, which will be manageable. But I think for the Fed, the one thing is obviously, despite its dovish assessment of the medium-term economic outlook, you know, them estimating that it will take about 3 years for economy to return to pre-virus levels of activity. I mean, that's quite a long time. And, you know, that's also something that I think is going to obviously affect global growth. But, I mean, the Fed also signaled that, you know, it's finished its tapering long-term asset purchase program for now. But, you know, I think the one thing that we are going to see is obviously as the corona case, the virus rises, it's going to be quite interesting to see, do they actually even increase that amount? I mean, they've been on this road before where, you know, in 2008, we saw much more in terms of QE. So is it going to be a case of them even pledging more to try and prop up the economy? That's going to be quite interesting to see what happens over the next couple of months.
You mentioned the minister's new budget, revised budget on the 24th June, that's just under 2 weeks from today. That is going to be, I mean, Minister Mboweni, South African finance ministers post Trevor Manuel have had tough budgets. This is going to be the toughest budget in a long time. We saw our business confidence yesterday plunge to its lowest level in the second quarter ever. It goes back to the early 70s. We don't have that luxury of the balance sheet. It is, you know, we will come out of it as a country, but it's going to be a long and harder road for the recovery locally.
Definitely. And I think, you know, when you look at February this year, when he tabled his budget, I mean, that was the most anticipated budget ever, especially given the fact that we had the Moody's downgrade looming. And this was just prior to COVID-19 hitting us, 2 weeks later. So, you know, already we are seeing news of potentially an IMF rescue package coming through, some coming from the World Bank and the African Development Bank and the BRICS Bank. So it's going to be interesting to see how he reallocates the budget. I mean, obviously, you know, the budget on the 24th will be making provision for COVID-19. And I think, obviously, there is going to be some sort of special adjustment to the budget guidelines, which will obviously include deadlines for departments to make submissions on who gets what, given the fact that, you know, we are seeing the escalating numbers locally. But this is over and above the 500 billion in fiscal support that President Ramaphosa obviously alluded to, you know, support all the COVID-19 priorities. So it's going to be quite interesting to see, especially where does he reallocate money from, especially I think the big sector that will be getting a huge slice of the cake will be obviously the healthcare sector. As we know, it's been in dire straits for the longest of times. And obviously with the escalating numbers that we are seeing now, I think, you know, the healthcare sector is obviously going to be given a bigger slice of the cake more than other sectors of the economy.
Yeah, it is going to be, I think you're right in that. Healthcare apps desperately needs it. They've needed it a long time. Now they have a really, really good case for it. Mthethwa Tulari is a business analyst at RMB. So appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Anthony Clark. He's Small Talk Daily, independent small caps analyst. Anthony, appreciate your time. Signia results yesterday. Revenue up 34%, a 40 cent dividend compared to 25 cents previously. The market liked it. Stock up 5%, plus two-year highs. Your key takeaway from what were a really strong set of results? What was a highlight for you?
Yeah, good morning, Simon. If you hear some rumbling in the background, it's the thunder and lightning we have from stormy Cape Town. So good morning to everybody there. I think the key highlights that I saw, Magda Wiejczyska, the CEO, gave a webinar yesterday, and she was fairly optimistic for the second half, despite the very tough economy we actually operate in, with a scope of further retrenchments, a much tighter retirement fund industry. She seemed to indicate that despite the astonishing first half we had, where earnings were up, as you mentioned, 102% to 64 cents a share and a 40 cents dividend, the second half would be slightly slower. But a lot of the levers that are put in place at Signia regarding infrastructure, staff costs, and of course their very low-cost fees and structures should pan out in the second half. But I think the key highlight for me was the astonishing rise in trading income. That rose 122% to 96 million rand. And that's made up from forex trading, script lending, brokerage services, et cetera, et cetera. And whilst that number is a large number and is virtually half what asset management makes, Magda seemed to indicate it was fairly sustainable going forward, albeit at a slightly slower rate. So the market, as you mentioned, liked the story yesterday. The stock rose 5.1%. But since the trading update, which came out on the 27th of May, the stock has risen an astonishing 52%.
Oh, okay, that is astounding. And that trading income, I look at Signia, I don't think of trading, but as you said, it's a giant number. And if they're talking about it being sustainable, one of the things that's going to really help them, they're going to get some pressure. Distressed companies are reducing workforce, suspending contributions to retirement funds. But where Signia sits is that low end of the fee curve, and there's been that fee war. And this is almost to a degree going to play into their hands. They're going to lose some customers. They're going to see some contributions down, but they're also going to pick up customers as that fee war really plays into where Signia positioned themselves.
Absolutely. Magda mentioned in the call yesterday that the pricing pressure seen in the industry in the last couple of years hasn't really affected Signia because their fees are always quite low. And as such, as you mentioned, it does play into their hands. As more clients move into passive investment funds, which are basically index trackers, which is where they specialize in that marketplace. And going forward, they're having a very large push towards the retail sector. The retail part of their business grew quite nicely in the last 6 months. And I think, again, in the webinar, Magda mentioned the real key battleground for the next 6 to 12 months won't be in actually gaining new money. It'll be actually taking market share away from other competitors whose perhaps performance isn't as good or their fees are too high. I think in the current tight economic environment that individuals and corporates are facing, looking at fees and the underlying costs of managing one's money will become paramount. And Signia is quite well placed in the current environment to pick up on any trends.
I want to switch now to Ascendas Health. I know this is a stock you follow very closely. It's had a wild ride. I mean, back in March, it was trading at 31 cents. It got over 2 rand. It's now trading around a rand. Two key announcements this week. Beginning of the week was the restructuring of debt facilities. This is critically important. They need to sell one of their businesses in Europe. But in the meantime, they need to manage that debt. And then yesterday, the resignation of the chief financial officer.
Yes, Ascendas has had a wild ride this year. It's a stock I've been covering probably for a good year or so. I was very negative late last year at about 3 Rand 20 and advised to sell. The stock, if you correctly say, fell to a low of 29 cents at the height of the COVID-19 meltdown in the global market. And then in the space of a week and a half, it went from 29 cents to 2 Rand 29 intraday. I don't think many stocks in the COVID-19 crisis rose 700% in a week and a half. It's since come all the way back to 96 cents. But as you mentioned, the key scenario for me has been the amend and extend. The company as it stands right now has circa 6 billion rand in debt, which dwarfs its 520 million rand market cap. That is held by a consortium of 13 lenders, of which 71% of that debt is euro-denominated. And with the rand having fallen out of bed this year, that debt does look very untenable. So as you mentioned, they have to sell assets to repay debt. What management needed was breathing space to enable them to actually have an orderly sale of assets rather than a fire sale. Now, this amend and extend does not come cheaply. Bankers, as you know, demand their pound of flesh. Mm-hmm. But it's given the company until December 2021 to actually sell assets without having any recall to that debt. That, to me, was very crucial. The share price bounced at one point intraday by about 25%. It came back to about 13% on Monday. So I think that piece of good news is a cornerstone of Ascendas sorting itself out. Regarding the CFO departing yesterday, he's not departing quite yet. He's going at the end of September. Ascendas is a June year end, mm-hmm. so he'll be there for results.
Okay.
But let's not forget that he was part of the old guard that got Ascendas into the trouble it's actually in. And perhaps the new CEO and the new board just wish to clean house, you know, to change the profile of the company.
I like that, cleaning house, and I particularly like they've got that breathing space. That's exactly what Ascendas needed. You don't want to be forced into fire sales. Anthony Clark, Small Caps Daily, thanks for your time this morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on The Money. Also available on podcast.
Staying with debt, we're chatting with Keith McLachlan. He's a fund manager at Alpha Asset Management. Morning, Keith. We're just chatting debt with Anthony. And debt's always been important, but you did a presentation last month, and one of the line that's going to stay with me forever is no one ever modeled for zero income. And that's the scenario we're finding ourselves in as investors. For you, as someone who trolls through balance sheets and the numbers, what's the key debt red flag that you would be looking out for indebted companies and the JSE at the moment?
Hi, Simon. Well,
First of all, the things we look for in terms of debt, you know, in the analysis of solvency and liquidity within companies, now that's changed and the tools available to directors and management in order to control and manage that debt, none of that's changed. What has changed has been the circumstances.
Yeah.
And as you said, no one modeled for zero. So your starting point in this case is no different, just the circumstances have changed. So, well, and it might be beyond obvious, but you cannot pay debt back with promises and accounting figures. You have to pay it back with cash. So your starting point will always be free cash flow. Now, it sounds strange to say that in the circumstances some companies are not trading, but consider the fact that some actually are. So a company that is classified an essential service, that is trading through lockdown, even if it is in a watered-down form of that trading and there's been demand destruction and the like, if it is generating free cash flow and you have confidence with that, it will always be in a stronger position than an equivalently geared company that hasn't been trading.
And that then brings me to something such as Soho Sun. Sun Gaming results had earlier in the week, $11 billion in debt on their balance sheet. Their challenge is they're not trading in this environment. Casinos are closed. The limited payout machines in the pubs are closed. Do we then turn our eyes to, they're obviously struggling with it. What is their debt profile? What are their debt covenants? Because they're going to be having to go to their lenders and renegotiating terms, I imagine.
So let me use a little bit of an anecdotal example. But if someone were to lend you know, let's call it an infinite amount of money, and it doesn't matter what interest rate they charge you, but you never have to pay it back, you would never go bankrupt.
Yeah.
It actually doesn't matter what you do with the money. If you never actually have to pay it back, you're fine. And then that's really what we're talking about in terms of debt profiles. Now, it's a little-known fact that the Prudential Authority, in issuing their letter to the banks that everyone picked up on the fact they guided them not to pay dividends over the next 12 months, if you actually read the whole letter much lower down, there's far more interesting things. And one of the interesting things they say is that over this period of lockdown, if banks are to restructure debt that is in good standing, it will not trigger higher reserves. Now, typically, restructuring will trigger an impairment or first indication of distressed debt. So, and the moment it's distressed debt, banks must provide higher for it. It hurts their reserves, and that ultimately hurts their liquidity, et cetera, et cetera. So banks are loath to do this, except over this period. And if you're going into this period in good standing, restructuring and pushing out your principal payments for as long as possible, in fact, buys you time. And that's the best you can do in this sort of scenario where you, for example, on Soho Sun, you are unable to trade despite the fact you have a large amount of debt. And they've done that relatively successfully. Their debt providers have given them. Now, it doesn't mean that they are taking haircuts in the debt.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that the debt is not incurring interest. But in Soho Gaming's instance, they pushed out interest payments for 3 quarters. They pushed out principal payments a little longer. They restructured debt to buy themselves time. And that's ultimately the best thing you can do in this scenario is buy yourself time.
And that's a great point. I'm guilty. I read the first part of that letter. I didn't go all the way down to the bottom, and shame on me. But I like that point. So in essence, they're giving the banks the saying, here's that wiggle room to restructure, to actually in good standing. And that's a fair point. If you're not in good standing, your bank manager's not going to like you. Last question. One of the things, and this is typically something I hunt out in annual report, the debt covenants. And these are sort of the terms and conditions which, if they get breached, the bankers can call the money back. What I suspect we're seeing a lot of is renegotiating of those debt covenants, because, yeah, you know, I know that it's an overused word, but we are in, I mean, we haven't had a pandemic in 100 years. We perhaps need to do things a bit differently, and debt covenants are one of those spaces.
Yeah, so debt covenants are typically issued along with debt to protect the lender. So that if the borrower is flying close to the sun or something is going wrong, that long-term debt very quickly becomes immediately callable. So
mm-hmm.
It shifts from non-current liability in the balance sheet to current, and that's when solvency becomes a liquidity problem. Now, in this instance, I don't believe you'll have debt covenants being restructured, but you are having them being waived.
Yeah,
banks are going, well, you know what, if you're not earning income over this period, me checking my debt versus your income statement is rather pointless, and I don't want to prejudice you over this period. So coming into here, in good standing, let's push our principal payments, let's roll forward interest payments, and let's waive this period's debt covenants, but we'll keep them in place for normal trading in the future.
Good point. They stay there, but perhaps we don't look at them quite so hard for the next little while. Keith McLachlan, Alpha Asset Management, always appreciate your time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. Moneyweb.co.za or the Moneyweb app. Podcasts available from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social medias, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening. My guests, my producer, my sound engineer. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.